Chapter 10, Our Friends, Our Choice. Families are not the only influences that shape our lives and how we choose to live them. This is especially true as we get older and spend more time with friends, girlfriends, and boyfriends. The main difference between our family and friends is simple. We don't choose our families, but we can choose our friends. Are friends safe to make? When we work with young men who have been arrested and placed in detention centers and residential treatment centers, we often ask them about their friendships. Most of the kids we talk to say that they don't have friends. When we ask them about the people that they hang out with, they tell us that these are their associates. At first, we didn't really get it. But over time, it became clear to us. These guys had been hurt, snaked, disappointed, and let down so many times that their hearts had become closed in order to protect themselves. It all came down to trust. For some, the issue was not wanting to be hurt emotionally. For others, trust was a matter of survival. I sometimes watched the guys hanging out together. Anybody could see that many of them felt a genuine warmth towards each other. They wanted the goods that friendship offered. Companionship, protection, someone to listen to you, and someone who really cares. But all the time, one eye was watching their backs. Philip, 18 years old. Trust. It is hard to trust friends, but if trust is put on me, then I feel I have collateral, and they trust me, and I trust them. But the thing is, trust can always come back and bite you in the ass. To trust or not to trust, that's the real question. We don't just get our beliefs about whether it is safe to trust our families, friends, and girlfriends, boyfriends overnight. Babies don't come into the world suspicious of everyone, prepared to be disappointed, watching their backs. We build these beliefs over time. We learn from the way our families and friends treat us. If people are there for us, we usually believe the world is trustworthy. Of course, most of us have been lied to, cheated on, and let down at least once. Unfortunately, it is part of life. However, if we are disappointed or treated unfairly time and time again, we believe that we can't trust anyone but ourselves. Nobody's fool. There is an old saying, "Trick me once, shame on you. Trick me twice, shame on me." This basically means that you should learn to be suspicious if anyone cheats or hurts you so that it doesn't happen again. By being on your guard all the time and expecting that everyone has bad intentions, you can protect yourself from getting hurt or looking stupid. Unfortunately, if you choose to live your life this way, you will give up a lot. You give up the chance for love, intimacy, and caring. You make a choice that being alone or building up walls around yourself is better or safer than building a group of people you can trust. As you get older, it is possible to create a different kind of family built from friends. But in order to surround ourselves with loving and caring people, we need to do two things. We need to learn how to trust and be trustworthy. And we need to choose the kinds of people who can be trusted. Your trust history. Stop and think. Think about the level of trust you give to people in your life. Think about your family and friends, both past and present. Is there anyone you trust in your life now? How about in the past? How did that person get your trust? Did he or she have to earn it, or did you just give it to them? What would you do if that person broke your trust? Could they ever get it back? Do you think that you are someone that others can trust? Is there anyone in your life who trusts you? Showing the real you. Letting someone get really close can sometimes freak us out because we think they'll see us for who we are. We think, if they really knew me, there's no way they'd come back. I lose my temper sometimes. I'm a bad dancer. I'm too bossy, but who are you really? Underneath these small parts of your personality, bossy, grumpy, bad dancer, is the core self, and the true self of everyone is wise, strong, good, and lovable. Next time you feel that no one could love you if they knew you, remind yourself who you really are. Do you deserve my trust? A section for young women. Let's be clear. Not everyone deserves our trust. You've all been around long enough to know that some people are not mature enough to treat us with the respect, dignity, and caring that we deserve. The better you become at seeing this, the easier it will be to trust. If you are in an abusive relationship now, take a close, hard look at why you are staying. Rosemary, 19 years old. I stayed in an abusive relationship because I loved him and because I had a kid with him. I got out because it got to the point where I started thinking with my head instead of my heart. He came from a bad home and he never had no one to show him how to love. I kept thinking I can be the person to open his heart, to show him how to really be with someone. Plus, every time I said that I was leaving, he would say he couldn't live without me and how he would kill himself. I felt guilty about that. I think he wanted to change, but he wasn't ready. Yeah, he was my son's father, but I got to make the right choice for me and my baby. Another reason I stayed was because my father was never around, and I didn't want my kid to feel like that. But I asked myself, what kind of message was I sending my son? I don't want my kid to grow up watching his father beat on me. I moved out, took my stuff, and took my son. He still comes around to harass or to beg me to go back with him, but I don't think that a man should ever put his hand on me, especially if he says he loves me. So the thought of being with him again won't cross my mind. I do think I still love him, but I can't put myself back in that type of situation again. No matter what, there is never a good reason to stay in an abusive relationship, even if you have a child together. Especially if you have a child together. That doesn't mean that guys who abuse can't change. They can, but it takes a lot of hard work on his part, like counseling or support groups for batterers. Not just promises. Many young women have spent a lifetime watching their mothers get involved over and over with men who did not deserve their trust. You saw the pain and the hurt these men brought into the lives of the people that you loved. Perhaps every time she found someone new, she would believe that things were different this time only to be hurt. Cheated on, used, lied to, rejected, and disappointed again. You might even have found yourself getting involved with men who did the same types of things. Maybe you believed that this is just how man-woman relationships work. Tanya, 18 years old. My mom always get involved with men who used her. It was like she was walking around with a sign on her back telling men to take her money, mess up her house, and cheat on her. No matter what, she would always take them back if they showed her some love. In a way, I'm like that too. I always get with guys I know are kind of bad boys. That's just the kind I seem to be attracted to. But I know how to take care of myself. I don't let them walk over me like my mom did. I give as good as I get. Unconditional love doesn't depend on our performance. It is always there. For those of us who never knew this kind of acceptance, we are used to taking the kind of love that comes with strings. We might find ourselves settling for love that places us at risk, uses us, abuses us, victimizes us, and threatens to leave us if we don't meet its demands. Ask yourself, honestly, whether you are addicted to the thrill of the makeup-breakup cycle. He does you wrong, you break up. It feels bad, he begs for you to come back, you get together, it feels good, and the cycle continues over and over. The cycle of high-risk love is the same as any other high-risk behavior. You become hooked on the drama. Although this cycle of ups and downs might feel familiar and predictable to you, it usually ends with someone getting hurt. These drama relationships are impostures of real love. In healthy love, the core self of each person is respected and honored. To connect with the deeper self of someone else, it helps to be connected with your core self first. Setting boundaries with boyfriends, girlfriends, and just friends. Jamie, 18 years old. When I got pregnant, my boyfriend's attitude started to change and he started talking to me like I didn't matter anymore. He wouldn't take me anywhere with him and he left me in the laundromat by myself to wash his clothes. I would page him and he wouldn't call me back until 5 hours later. He wouldn't put any attention on me and he expected me to stay at home all day. He expected me to cook food for him no matter what time of the day it was. He used to embarrass me outside and yell at me in front of everyone and just act really dumb. I really felt like I didn't want to be with him anymore. I regretted getting pregnant with him. Then one day I just couldn't take the pressure anymore. I got mad and just went off on him and told him how I felt. I told him that the relationship was going nowhere, that I didn't know what I felt for him and he wasn't the person I fell in love with, that I was not sure if I wanted to be with him. I told him he had 2 weeks to change his attitude and his actions. And if he didn't get it together, that I was not going to be with him because he was not there for me. Ever since then, he comes home by 1 o'clock. When he sees me sleeping, he makes his own food. He's looking out for me and the baby now, and he knows what he has to do. He's there for me physically and mentally, and that makes me feel good. If I hadn't drawn the line, I think we would not be together now. Sometimes we find ourselves in relationships that we think are fine at first. Then it becomes clear that we are being abused, disrespected, walked on, cheated, hurt, or played. We then have to make a decision. Do I stay or do I go? And if I stay, what are my limits? Jamie's story is a good example of someone setting boundaries. That means she took a hard look at her relationship and decided what she would put up with and what she wouldn't. She realized that she deserved more than what she was getting. She decided that if her boyfriend didn't change, she would have to leave. Although a move like Jamie's takes guts, each of you reading this book has the power to set boundaries for yourself. In Jamie's case, her boyfriend was willing to change. But setting boundaries with someone doesn't mean that they will do what you want. It just means that you are not willing to stay in a relationship where you are not getting what you need or deserve. Even if your mother or father couldn't set limits with their partners, you can. Trusting people who can be trusted. Let's say we've scoped the person out long enough to know he or she is trustworthy. So what's the problem? Why can't we really trust? Even letting someone who seems emotionally safe get to know us can feel like high-risk behavior. And it is. But becoming trusting is a risk that leads to self-growth, not self-destruction. Getting to know someone on a deeper level, allowing them to learn about who you are and sharing your feelings, can feel very threatening to a lot of people. We get scared and say to ourselves, "What if I get too attached? They might leave and cause me pain." These are risks we take when we become close or intimate with people. However, these are risks or challenges that can lead to positive and loving relationships. By staying closed, we miss an opportunity to feel a strong connection to someone. And it is through these connections that we learn about ourselves, our strengths, and the power of our true nature. By staying close to others, we stay close to ourselves. The power of choice. Part of learning about ourselves and gaining greater power over our lives is actively choosing the kinds of peers that won't drag us down. We have to develop the kind of trust radar and use it. Who can we trust? Who can we depend on? We need to be assertive when choosing the types of people we are willing to let into our lives. That means that we aren't willing to hook up with someone we know is a threat to us. Is trouble knocking? There's a big difference between not knowing that a peer is going to be trouble and knowing that he or she is bad news, but going along with him anyway? Do you find yourself making friends with people that get you into bad situations? Do your friends seem cool but then talk you into doing high-risk things? Maybe sharpening your trust radar is a good idea. Exercise. Imagine that you're a cop sitting in your cruiser by the side of the highway. A cop knows exactly how fast the person is driving by pointing a radar at the car coming towards him. Let's say that your trust radar works sort of the same way. When a new person comes along and wants to be friends with you, point the trust radar at him or her to find out how trustworthy he or she is. What does the trust radar need to tell you about the person? What questions should the trust radar ask? Here's a list that one group came up with. Do they get them all? What do I know about this person? What kind of reputation do they have? Who else do they hang out with? What does she or he do for fun? Is this someone I can trust in my house? Is this person going to steal from me? Is he or she positive in the community? Is she or he in a gang? How does this person handle conflict? When I'm around him or her, do I act like myself or am I putting on a front? Does he or she pressure me to do things that I don't feel comfortable about? What does my instinct tell me about this person? If you ask yourself these questions and your trust radar doesn't tell you whether this person is a positive or negative peer, take it slowly. Don't rush into a relationship if your gut says that there might be trouble. Stop and think. Take a moment and think back on the kinds of friends that you have had throughout your life. Were they a good influence on you, or did they lead you to participate in high risk and dangerous behavior? Looking back at your past friendships, do you see yourself as a leader or follower? Do you go along with the ideas of your friends, even if they are dangerous or can lead you into trouble? Peer pressure. Isaiah, 16 years old. I was 13 years old and I was hanging with an older crew of guys, maybe 16 or 17 years old. We were walking downtown and the guy who was kind of the leader told me to snatch a gold chain from this old lady waiting for the bus. Truth be told, I didn't want to do it, but he kept saying it and I felt like I had to do it. I went up to this lady and asked her if the clock in front of us was right. When she looked up, I snatched the chain and ran. I gave the chain to the guys and they sold it on the street for like 20 bucks or something. I got caught about 2 hours later. I didn't rat the other guys out, so I did 2 months in lockup alone. What are some of the reasons that kids give in to peer pressure? Read through this list and ask yourself which ones you have experienced in the past. 1. To save face. This means to keep yourself from being embarrassed or looking weak. You might have a reputation as tough or cool that you want to keep, or you might want others to start thinking of you that way. Basically, you don't want to be teased or humiliated by the people pressuring you. 2. To be accepted by a group of people and fit in, want to be down. 3. To prove something to yourself or others. 4. Sometimes the people pressuring you to do something threaten you if you don't do it. 5. You don't want to be the one to ruin the fun or bust up a party. 6. Sometimes things just start to happen and you have a hard time finding the right time to back out. Look at that last one on the list. You might find that peer pressure sort of sneaks up on you and that you get carried away in the moment. For example, some kids find themselves involved in a high-risk behavior that gets more and more out of control, and rather than asserting themselves and backing out, they follow it through. If this happens to you, you need to find good escape hatches. Some kids say lie if you have to. Say your parents grounded you and you can't go out. Say you're sick. Say whatever you have to in order to stay out of a high-risk situation. This means that you need to listen to your inner voice when it first starts to tell you that things are getting too wild or out of control. When in doubt, get out. Gangs. George, 18 years old. Being in a gang seems like fun when you're young. You get caught up in all this negative shit like doing drugs, drinking, fighting, getting locked up. But then when you get older, you might be sick of it. I mean, you might want to do something positive with your life, and then it's too late. When you try to change, your enemies remember you, and they come looking for you for revenge. But because you left the gang, your homies don't have your back anymore. You got no one to back you up, and then you end up on the run to stay away from people. So that's it, man. Once you're in, you made your bed. We once asked a group of guys how many of them were in a gang or knew someone in a gang. One guy looked at us and said, "What exactly do you mean when you say gang?" And he was right. The word gang has a lot of different meanings. When we say gang, we mean belonging to a group involved in high-risk activities. Any group that moves you away from the real power of your core self toward the false power of the gang. In this section, we talk about the emotional factors that cause people to join gangs. If you are already in a gang, we're not judging you. We are not telling you what you should or shouldn't do. We're hoping to help you get greater self-awareness about what pulled you in and whether you want to stay. Gangs, do they really protect you? Learning the world is unsafe. Nobody is born violent. We learn violence. And the reason that most kids learn to use their fists or weapons is to protect themselves. If you are beat up going to school every day or threatened with a knife or a gun, the first thing you might have done is tell a teacher or your parents. But maybe these adults were unable or just refused to protect you. Maybe the adults in your family or community were afraid of being the victim of violence. Stop and think. Think back to a time when you needed to be helped or protected by an adult. As clearly as you can, remember the situation. Did the adult step in and help you, or did they ignore your call for help? How did you feel about the way things worked out? Did it leave you feeling safe and protected, or weak and defenseless? Looking for safety. Human nature makes us want to be safe so that we can survive. Nobody wants to feel like they are going to be gunned down or jumped each time they go to school or walk to the store. For many kids, it is better to look and act like you are angry, dangerous, and ready to go off on someone than to feel like you might get jumped or scammed. But even if you look like the toughest, hardest guy or girl, that might not be enough to protect you. Even if you are willing to fight over and over again, you might still get jumped or threatened. So where do kids turn when they feel like they need protection, but they can't get it from their families, teachers, or adult neighbors? Many turn to gangs. The myth of protection. Lawrence, 17 years old. I first joined a gang because I was raised in a bad neighborhood. Almost everyone on my block was in a gang. And if you didn't join, some other gang would start to pick on you and mess with you, and you couldn't be safe or just left alone. Being in a gang made me think I'd be the kind of guy who got a lot of respect. But I didn't really. The only thing I got was to learn to talk a lot of shit and going through bad things like getting locked up. When you're in a gang, everyone is kind of scared of you and everyone kind of hates you. You feel like you always gotta watch your back, even though you join so you would be protected. The problem is that gangs offer a myth of protection. That means that it promises one thing and gives you another. Many kids who join gangs are shocked when they figure out the level of violence and danger inside a gang. They feel they opened themselves up to even greater levels of violence than they had been exposed to before they joined. This makes them grow deeper into the role of violence and further from their true self. They often feel pushed to do things that go against their judgment and their sense of right and wrong. It is the ultimate form of peer pressure. Although a gang might protect you in certain situations, it places you and your family in danger. All of a sudden, you are the target of people you don't even know. Conflicts from before you joined can put your life at risk. So where is the safety in that? Gangs and power. Jose, 17 years old. I spent most of my life being overlooked by everyone or forgot. I come from one of the worst neighborhoods in the Bronx, and the schools and parks were run down and dangerous. The teachers never listened to what I had to say. I didn't get in a lot of trouble, so in a way, I was just like invisible. My parents had a lot of problems and didn't really notice what I did that much. Once I got pulled over by store security because they thought I stole something even though I didn't. My parents didn't speak too much English and they couldn't really help me out. I was just sitting there for a long time feeling totally powerless and like anything could happen to me. Some kids deal with these feelings of powerlessness by joining gangs. Being part of a gang can give you a sense that you have some weight or that you can control things around you. You think a whole group of people is there to back you up, to fight for you, to give you the power you didn't have before. You think kids will treat you differently if they know you are in a gang. Maybe by victimizing others, you feel like you can get control over all the times when you felt like the victim. Many kids who are in gangs find the power that they experience comes with a big price tag. The biggest thing that they talk about is the control they give up over what they do and the choices they have. If you are in a gang and they tell you to rob a store, steal a car, or jump a kid, how much of a choice do you have? Would you say, "I'm going to pass on this one, folks"? Do you have as much personal freedom to make the kinds of choices that are best for you? Belonging to a gang can give you the physical power of many people, but it also means that you lose a great deal of control over your choices and your future. If you think that gangs make decisions with your best interest in mind, you are seriously fooling yourself. The power of a gun. Darren, 17 years old. My friend was killed last year in a gang-related shootout. He was shot 3 times in the face and 2 times in the chest. I felt like I had lost my brother. During the funeral, when I saw his face in my mind, I hoped he would go to a better place than the one here on earth. He was a very nice person. Every night I go to sleep, I can picture the place where he was killed. His death changed my life. One of the big things that has changed in many neighborhoods, especially those in big cities over the past 20 or so years, is the number of guns that have found their way into the community. It used to be that when kids had a problem, they would fight it out with their fist or in the worst case with a knife. This chapter is not a place for us to argue how dangerous carrying a gun is. Just by looking around, you can see that people who carry guns are much more likely to die from one than those who don't carry. It is an extremely high-risk behavior, just like joining a gang. The power you get from a gun opens you up to a new level of risk and potential for violence. A place to belong. Darnell, 16 years old. When I was around 13, I felt like my life was just a play on stage or an experiment that God was doing. I got involved in a gang because I wanted to feel a sense of belonging. I wanted to feel like people cared about me. But a gang to me now is something that I wish I didn't join. I learned that a gang can make you feel comfortable and happy for a while, but it will not keep you safe forever. It will not give you a future if that's what you want. For people who never got a sense of love and belonging from their own families, the pull to join a gang can be very powerful. If you spent your whole life feeling like nobody really cared about you, a gang can feel like the answer. It is human nature to want to be surrounded by people who accept us. Many kids report feeling closer to their gang members than they do their own family. It's like they say, you can't choose your family, but you can choose your friends or your gang. David, 19 years old. I got involved in the gang because of the lack of love and care in my family. I grew up in a single-parent family, My mom was always out working and trying to make ends meet, trying to fulfill the American dream. She tried so hard that she forgot to be there when I needed her the most. So I went out to the street searching for love and somewhere to belong. It didn't feel like being in a gang. It felt like a family. But it was the kind of family that can get you killed real fast. Is this who I really am? One of the jobs of being a teenager or young adult is figuring out who you are and how you fit into the world. For some kids, joining a gang can be like getting an instant identity. That means that before you joined a gang, you maybe weren't quite sure who you really were, or maybe you weren't sure if other people knew. After you join a gang, however, you are a Blood or a Crip or a Latin King or a... Now they see you as tough, backed up by a crew of other people, someone to be feared and you think respected. Maybe in your neighborhood, people look at you in a whole new way, and this might feel good to you for a while. But once you decide to join a gang, your identity comes under a powerful force. You are no longer free to pick and choose how to conduct yourself. Instead, you are told. It's like surrendering your true self for a false self. And while the power you get or take from others might feel good in the short run, what you sacrifice is much greater. Gangs and role models. For those of you locked up for selling drugs, you know that there is a gang mentality that goes along with the business. Not every gang sells drugs, and not all drug trading involves a gang, but the two things are not so different. There is always a pecking order or rank system in the drug trade, with one or two guys at the top and everyone else falling in beneath them. Many kids who have joined gangs or started selling drugs have talked about how these older guys seem like father figures to them. These guys often seem powerful, have a lot of cash on them, drive nice cars, and big reputations. They often give new kids extra attention or make them feel like there is something unique or special about them. This is especially true for guys who are recruiting you to hustle for them. They draw you in with cash and special treatment and make you feel that you are going to be just like them, running the show someday. Father figures. Being singled out for special attention can be a powerful trip for kids who never knew their own fathers well or at all. Even if the guy is a cold-blooded killer, we often mistake their attention for love. Wanting to be loved like a son does not make you weak. It shows that you are human. In fact, wanting to be loved is healthy and natural. The problem comes when you go looking for love in the wrong places. These older guys might be the first people to give you money or allow you to do something that seems important. They might seem to treat you with respect and trust you with their money and their drugs. These guys might seem like everything a man is supposed to be. Smart, tough, makes a lot of money, and powerful. You might find yourself wanting to become like them. It doesn't take long to figure out the downside of these relationships. Screwing up one time can mean your life. Kids start to realize that they are being used by the dealer to make money and that these guys are only about their business, not about the kids they use to sell their drugs. Many of you might be locked up because you took the fall for an adult. In the video series Homeboys, Life and Death in the Hood, we hear from young men who all were either members of the Bloods or the Crips. One guy on the tape talked about how he started selling drugs when he was 12 because he looked up to the older guys who were running the business. He talked about never knowing his own father, but wishing that his dad was like these guys who gave him money and promised to protect him. After he got really involved in the drug trading, the big money that they had given him in the beginning stopped coming and it became clear that they were using him. They didn't care if he lived or died, as long as he sold the crack they gave him and returned every day with their money. Stop and think. If you never got a chance to know your father, or if you knew him only briefly, there may be a lot of things you want to say to him. And even if he's not around, you can still tell him how you feel. Imagine for a minute that your dad is standing in front of you. He asks you, in a genuine way, what it was like growing up without a dad. What would you tell him? What did it feel like not to know your dad? How did you feel about yourself? How did you or do you feel about him? Does it affect the kind of parent you are or want to be? Now, imagine that this is your dad's turn to talk. What would you like to hear from him? The real role models. Michael, 16 years old. Sometimes I feel like my life's been shut down, even when I know that people around me care about me. Not knowing my father makes me feel like I don't have a clear vision of myself at all. It's like a hole inside me. I wake up and look in a mirror, and I don't know who I am. How I'm going to figure that out is a mystery to me. Figuring out the kind of man or woman you want to be is a tough job. But the job is even tougher if you didn't really know your mom or dad. You might ask yourself, how's a real man or woman supposed to act? You know in your gut that a man's not supposed to run out on his family, but what is he supposed to do? This is where finding good role models can help us out where we want to go. You might not have grown up with your father as the role model of what a man is supposed to act like, but there are definitely men around you who might be a model to you. The same goes for women. Maybe your mom didn't live a life that you want, but you are free to look for other women to be role models. Finding people we admire and want to be like can help guide us and gives us goals, but finding role models requires you to make some decisions about who you are. If the people you admire want to be like are sending the messages that drugging, robbing, carrying weapons, and using people are the way to get power and respect, there's a problem. Stop and think. Take a minute and make a list of the people you consider to be your role models. They can be people in the neighborhood, athletes, family members, or anyone who you respect and admire. What is it about them that you admire? Their lifestyle? The way they handle themselves, the things they have achieved, their outlook on life, how caring they are. If you look at the role models you have chosen and found that they include people who promote violence or high-risk lifestyles that place you or others in danger, take some time to think about this. What is it that makes these people attractive? Do they seem to carry a lot of respect, authority, or power? Have they made a lot of money? And if so, what does that mean to you? What is it that they represent to you? The last word. Take a look at who your friends are, who you've signed on with. If you see these people are pulling you in the wrong direction, do something. It might feel hard to pull out when the car starts rolling down the hill, but it becomes much tougher as it picks up speed. Remember, you have the last word on who you hang with. Use it.